理课堂听 class.com。
Overview of RMA research. Interview with Dr. Michael J. Mazar, senior researcher at CSIS.
After the Gulf War, there has been an ongoing discussion of the revolution in military affairs in the defense community. Two of the earliest research results that I read, which caught my attention, were a CSIS report on military technological revolution and an article titled, Is There Military Technological Revolution in the Future of the U.S.?, published in CSIS's The Washington Quarterly, Fall 1993. Based on these two publications, and from references I gathered from other materials, I wrote a summary of the U.S. defense community's views on the military revolution, which was published in China Military Science in the spring 1995 issue. You were the main author of the CSIS report, as well as the editor of the article. Therefore, I have reason to believe that CSIS and yourself are among the earliest to research the subject of a military revolution in the United States. This is also the reason I'd like to interview you today. Could you give me an overview of your process and that of CSIS's process in researching the RMA?
We did come to this subject fairly early, when the U.S. defense establishment was trying to get an early understanding of what it was all about. So our work was fairly theoretical. This was an issue that was not very well defined at that time. And so, mostly, in that initial report, we were just trying to lay out, as the title suggested, a framework for understanding what the RMA was, how you could define it, and what future issues for research there would be. It was too early to have any final answers for ultimately what the revolution in military affairs would mean in all of its details for U.S. policy. Our goal at that time was just to gather a variety of information. We worked with people in the U.S. Defense Department, and we were working on new technology to try to get a comprehensive idea of the different areas of technology and doctrine and strategy that were being discussed in connection with the revolution in military affairs. We then wanted just to sort of organize them and put out a review that would start a dialogue, not provide the final answer, but begin a dialogue in the U.S. defense community, which really had not started very much at that time.
I have noticed that in your report and article, the term used is military technology revolution. But in later articles, revolution in military affairs was used instead. Is there a difference in using these two terms?
There's not a big difference. Basically, military technological revolution was a term that U.S. analysts first borrowed from the Soviet Union because, as you know, a lot of these ideas originated in Soviet thinking about advanced maneuverable warfare and armored warfare. So it was just a borrowed term. And then, eventually, as the idea began to take more shape in the United States, people began to realize that there was a broader context for a more radical change in warfare than the initial Soviet analysts were talking about. There is a difference in that the revolution in military affairs is a much broader term, much more encompassing. The military technical revolution, at least early on, generally was referring to much more advanced, precise ways of waging the same old kind of warfare. The revolution in military affairs refers to, possibly, completely new forms of waging war that would be unrecognizable to generals of the old style.
You argued that scientists, policymakers, and military leaders have been relatively poor assisting the military implications of revolution and technologies forecasting their effects on future battlefields. Why do these things happen? How do you assess the military implications of revolutionary technologies at the present time?
Well, the biggest problem in the U.S. system in thinking about this issue has been the problem of bureaucracy. That the Defense Department has certain services and offices, and soon, that they are organized based on the way that the United States military has waged war for 50, 60, 70 years now. And so, when new technologies come along, the bureaucracy tends to take them and put them into categories based on its traditional understanding and to view them as ways of waging the same old kind of war more efficiently, rather than as potential indications that the nature of war is changing. So the U.S. military has been very good at developing technology, good at pushing the technology into operational forces and using it, but not as good as seeing the broader implications of precision technologies, or perhaps moving too slowly. That process has begun to accelerate a little bit. Within the U.S. military, there's a lot more discussion today of, for example, changing the way military units operate on the battlefield because of new precise technologies, because of the need to have very small, decentralized units, those sorts of things. So that is happening more, but for a long time, for a decade or more, these technologies would come into the U.S. bureaucracy one at a time and would be plugged into the conventional way of doing business, and the broader implications of those were not seen very well.
Could you give me a brief introduction of the process of the CSIS report on military technological revolution? What was the influence of this report?
Well, the process we used to come to the conclusion was, in a way, a series of meetings, really. We did some initial research here at CSIS. Then we had somewhere around 50 or 70 people drawn from the different military services, from other research institutes around town, and from CSIS. We would do some initial research, get some ideas, present the ideas at these meetings, have a lot of feedback, conversation. And then, after we had a series of sessions like that, we, here at CSIS, drafted a rough draft report and sent it out for comment. I'm not sure exactly how many people sent comments back, but quite a few, a couple dozen at least. We did a final draft based on their comments, and that ultimately became the report. So all the writing was done here within the CSIS, but with a great deal of input from other folks around town. And this was really a group of people who were interested in the RMA, people who were following it at the time. There's a kind of a group of people within the military services who in many cases know each other fairly well, because they're part of this group that follows this issue on a regular basis. So at that time, those were the sorts of people that we were bringing together. And as far as influence, I don't know that the report really changed any thinking about the RMA at the time, because it was still fairly early. It was too early to make sort of a comprehensive argument for changing the U.S. military in the direction of the RMA, which is something we couldn't have done anyhow. But what I think it did do was help to organize the thinking early on and get people talking about the same issue or issues as part of the RMA. Because one of the problems at that early stage was all sorts of people had different ideas of what it was. So I think it helped to clarify the debate a little bit and just push it along. But we were certainly not trying to come up with any final answers at that time. That wasn't the influence we hoped out of the report.
Practice listening to words.
词汇听力练习.
CSIS, Center for Strategic and International Studies.
华盛顿战略与国际问题研究中心.
Washington Quarterly.
华盛顿季刊.
Issue,
批号。
Initial.
最初的。
Originate.
起源于。
Maneuverable warfare.
机动战。
Armored warfare.
装甲战。
Encompass.
包含。
Forecast.
预见。
Bureaucracy.
官僚主义。
Category.
分类。
Decentralize.
分散。
Plugged into.
纳入。
Conventional.
常规的。
Military service.
军种。
Feedback.
反馈。